All righty. It's just fascinating. We just got out of a story with the National Weather Service talking about flooding, and Todd Flood is here, the attorney and managing partner at Flood Law, host of Behind the Bench on WJR. In fact, we got a new episode coming up Wednesday, July 17th at 7 p.m. Todd, always a pleasure. How are you this afternoon?
A pleasure is mine, Paul W., and I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You know, the headline here in the Metro section of the Detroit News, and this has been going on for a while now, but suspect in Jewish leader's death, I did not kill her. He lied to cops but didn't want death pinned on him, he says. This has been in my mind, but you're in up to your elbows. In my mind, this has been very perplexing and very sad and unfortunate all the way.
It is. It's as my mentor said, Augie Hutting, this is the Valley of Tears, right? This is a case where a family of a victim tries to find some closure, and then a family of a defendant is, you know, put on trial and through trial and could be coming out of prison in a box. So it is perplexing. This is a case good. And remember this rule, good cases usually don't go to trial. Good cases usually resolve well before trial, unless there's no offers possible. In this particular situation, the prosecution methodically and very cogently put together the timeline, and obviously the defendant was at the scene because he had blood on his jacket, he had blood on the backpack. And the defense points to the fact that, hey, this is the wrong person at the wrong time, at the wrong place, and they didn't have the evidence to show that he actually did the killing. And there was a lack of evidence. There was a pillow that was at the scene that was bloody and had a footprint in it. You can rest assured that the prosecution had that footprint or that shoe print matched that of the defendant, they would have put it up there. But they didn't. The fact that they didn't search the bonfire where they searched the lover or the boyfriend, the former boyfriend's house where he could have put the weapon. You know,
the boyfriend who said he did it, by the way.
Right. So, you know, it's a tough case. These are tough cases, and I see Kim Worthy, and I love Kim, and she had a job to do, and she had probable cause that a crime obviously was committed, and more than probable cause that this guy did it. So they have to put this in front of a jury, and we call that in this country due process. And I would say to this jury about reasonable doubt that I have said, you know, and I'll point to the flag. Many people died fighting for that flag, for the Constitution and due process. And you don't want to guess. You don't want to guess. To say, I think he did it. It's likely he did it. That's not the standard. You got to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's what the Constitution stands for. So it's a tough case. It's a tough case. And I feel for the victims, and I understand the defense, and I think they did a cogent job as well.
I'm going to go backwards here, and I'm going to try to get into the mind of a very successful attorney. That's you, Todd Flood, as the attorney and managing partner at Flood Law, host of our own Behind the Bench on WJR. When you said good cases don't go to trial, I hear you. I understand you're saying that, but I'm not exactly sure what you mean. I mean, if good cases don't go to trial, that means that somebody's been able to work out a deal, but does that have anything to do with guilt or innocence?
So when you have a case that's a slam dunk on the government side, the defense is trying to negotiate a plea agreement, trying to negotiate a plea bargain, and it's just a matter of years. It's a term. What's palatable for the victim's family? They have a victim's right advocate. Do they want to go through all of this? And then on the defense side, you know, you're looking to see whether or not you can strike something because the evidence is so overwhelming. Now, let's take it to the other side of the fence. let's say that the case is good for the defense, it's bad for the prosecution, but it's a huge gamble. And you the guy's guilty, or the person is guilty, I should say, and but they don't want to risk it. They don't want to see whether or not, you know, because tea leaf reading time, you know, you don't want to put it in front of a jury. They may not like the person. And so you try to strike a deal at the lower end of guidelines with the government. Oftentimes, most of the time, good cases don't go because there's a negotiation to make a settlement. So based on innocence, you know, doesn't mean, not guilty doesn't mean innocent. Not guilty simply means that the government couldn't prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. In this particular case, defendant got up on the stand and said, I'm a black guy. It is a white lady. I'm not calling the cops because I know what will happen. And the government saying, if you're such a good Samaritan to see that she was alive or dead, then you went all that extra act. Why didn't you take the next steps? And then why did you lie 8 times to the cops? Why did you lie? And they play back the lies. And, you know, he's a defense counters. I'm a thief, but I'm not a killer. So you can see this case going back and forth, and I suspect it's going to be a strong rebuttal that comes up this afternoon, but I don't know if they can overcome that hurdle of proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
Todd, was this guy, Michael Jackson Bolanos or whatever it is, did they ever have proof that he was actually inside the house where there was the bloody scene and signs of a struggle?
No, they didn't have any fingerprints. They didn't have any of DNA. They didn't have anything of, you know, traction where the puddle of the blood was up by the doorsteps compared to where she was down out in the you know, the entryway of the sidewalk type deal. No, they didn't have anything of him inside. Wow. Otherwise, that would have came in. That would have been a game, set, match, possibly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They never found the weapon. Never found the knife.
Jeez, this is a tough one. I'm a criminal. I'm not a murderer. Wow.
Yeah.
Todd Flood always helps us. A fine attorney, managing partner at Flood Law, host of Behind the Bench on WJR with a new episode coming up next Wednesday, July 17th at 7 p.m. If you need a good attorney, you know one. It's Todd Flood. Thanks, Todd.
Paul, you're the best. Love you. Be well.
Love you, too, as we continue in Focus on WJR. Well, more kudos and awards. I read it a while ago. I'm not very fast on this thing to try to find. Well, look at this. I found it. This is from Emily Oakes saying that Mackinac Island was just named the number 3 best island in the continental U.S. by Travel and Leisure in their coveted World's Best Awards. Number 1, best summer travel destination, USA Today. Number 2, Best Flower Festival. Number 3, Best Fall Travel Destination. All that in USA Today. And now this newest award from Travel and Leisure in their coveted World Best Awards. So if you're planning a trip to Mackinac Island, and now you really should be, there's only one way to start your adventure off right, and that's aboard Schepler's Ferry, S-H-E-P-L-E-R-S, Schepler's Ferry. The Schepler's crew welcomes you to experience first-class, I do mean first-class service, offered to every guest every day. Now, whether you're visiting Grand Hotel, Mission Point, or another great island property, family-owned Schepler's Ferry departs every 15 minutes from St. Ignace and Mackinac City to get you there safely and quickly. Buy your tickets and check all departure and arrival times at sheplersferry.com. Sheplersferry.com. Schepler's Ferry. First-class service. Every guest, every day. For over 75 years, and I will be there to greet you when you get on board Schepler's Ferry to Mackinac Island. 144 WJR.